The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. I thought you need a little happy music since the Republicans got beat in Georgia last night. Congratulations to Senator Warnock and his reelection. Herschel, you did a good job, just not good enough. First time candidate disease. Final score, 51 to 48. 51.4% to 48.6 or something. 3-point win. Not close, no cheating involved, just a great turnout for Warnock, a better organization. And Herschel's a first-time candidate and not a very good one at that. And it goes into the category of first-time candidates who failed this year. That includes, of course, Carrie Lake and Blaise Masters in Arizona, Dr. Oz in Pennsylvania, Herschel Walker. Those four will be held up for a long time as well-meaning people who had enough money and enough time and a weak enough opponent that perhaps they ought to have won, or someone could have won that race, but not a first-time candidate who made first-time mistakes, and especially a first-time candidate closely aligned with Donald Trump. I think it's fair to say that if the former president had not encouraged Herschel, Herschel wouldn't have won. I thought Herschel was a very good man. I enjoyed interviewing him. I met him in person down there. Don't get between Herschel and a Georgia football fan. And I wish him well. He did a good job, but I'll bet you he wasn't prepared for this. And I'll bet you he did not realize that you asked for the left of this country or the right of this country to go after an opposite number. They will find out everything you've ever done, and they will get your son, and they'll get your son to turn against you, and they'll get your friends and family to say bad things about you, and they will find the dirt, and they'll use it, and they will throw questions at you relentlessly about anything other than, say, China. And it's not a great place to learn how to be a politician. Being a politician is a skill set, just like running a radio show. Generalissimo and I have long had a catchphrase, everybody's a producer. And everybody's a producer is shorthand for everyone thinks they can sit down and run a radio show for 3 hours, but in fact they can't. Well, it's much, much more difficult to run a statewide campaign than it is to run a radio show. But it helps to learn how to do it by learning how to be a candidate at the state and local level, or maybe a first-time congressional candidate. I've got Juan Siscamondi, who's going to be our freshman of the year. We always have one freshman when they have an incoming class who comes on once a month to tell us how it's going. Juan Siscamondi from Tucson is going to be our freshman of the year, and you're hearing from Juan later today. How did he get it together? How did he win in a purple district? How did Juan do it the right way and Herschel come up short? One of them is simply a matter of scale. First-time candidates don't have to learn as much if they're running for Congress than if they're running for Senate. If you're running for Senate in Georgia, I remember talking to Carl about Herschel, Karl Rove, saying, Carl, he's a great guy, but he's from Texas. And that was the first problem. He hadn't lived in Georgia in a long time. And the carpetbagging thing hit him and Dr. Oz. But generally also, are you fluent with the issues? Are you familiar with all the issue sets that are going to be coming up? Raphael Warnock is nothing if not eloquent. He's wrong about everything. I mean, he's pretty far left. He might be the most left-leaning member of the Senate now that Bernie Sanders has lost his wingman, Pat Leahy. And Bernie Sanders isn't quite really a Democrat, though. He runs for the Democratic presidential nomination. I've never understood that. Independent, but caucuses with the Democrats. Bernie's a socialist. Raphael Warnock is a socialist. And he's going to be there for 6 years with John Ossoff. So you have the most left-leaning and the least consequential members of the Senate representing one of the most important states. I think this is, by the way, prefiguring Ohio State's victory over the Bulldogs on New Year's Eve. It's going to be a rough month for Georgia Republicans. They're going to lose the regular election, they're going to lose the runoff, and then they're going to lose the national championship semifinal game against the Buckeyes. But congratulations, Pastor Warnock. See you around D.C. You're always welcome here on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Let me do the other news. Yesterday, a coalition of senators led by Tom Tillis on the Republican side, who's a friend of mine. I like Tom Tillis a lot. You know, Tom Tillis is one of the handful of Republican senators and congressmen who worked around the clock to get men and women out of Afghanistan a year and 3 months ago when it collapsed. And for that, I will always be grateful. And he won a tough race. And I do not know why he is involved in this, but they've rolled out an immigration reform plan that has not been vetted with anybody. They're doing the same thing they did in 2006 and 2013. A group of Republicans in the Senate decide that they will put together a group of four, a group of six, a group of eight, a group of 10, and they will tell us what to do on immigration. And once again, it's going to fail. And it's going to fail because it doesn't have the wall. I have not changed my position on this from 2004, and I don't think any American has changed their position on this. We want a double-sided, very large fence or a wall, like Donald Trump's wall, along every part of the southern border that can be walked over. And that is the first precondition of an immigration reform deal. That's it. Now, the 11 million or 20 million, somewhere in between there, people in the country without permission, illegal immigrants, you can call them whatever you want. They're not here legally. They came across the border illegally. And, oh, wait, they claimed amnesty. Yeah. Well, everyone says they're innocent as well. But they didn't get permission to enter, and they've come across at a border, or they've come across, and lots of them die along the way. It's a horrible situation. That will not change until the border has a physical barrier on it, supplemented by a great deal of additional security and a very robust border patrol. And this begins by talking about the Dreamers. And there isn't anybody I know who wants the Dreamers out, but they do all want an immigration reform package that accomplishes a few things. Regularization is fine. Pathway to citizenship is not. It depends on what's in the pathway. So you throw that at me. I said, that doesn't mean anything. Tell me what you're talking about. Regularization means you can stay and work, and we're not going to throw you out if you don't get in trouble with the law. And your children who you brought over, your minor children, they get to stay and work, and we're not going to throw them out. And they get to go to college, and they get to become residents of the state and qualify for in-state tuition. You all get driver's license, but we're not going to declare you citizens. And I don't know what the conditions for declaring citizenship is. That's a negotiated issue. But nothing's going to happen until they build a wall. And so Senator Tillis and the rest of you, it's disastrous again. And you ought to go back and talk to John Cornyn and John Kyle, because these are two very smart guys, John Cornyn and John Kyle, two of my favorite senators in the 23 years I've been doing this. And they always will tell you they really didn't know what was going to happen when they tried 2006 and 2013. But now it's 10 years later and it's going to lose again. It's going to blow up again. I just don't know why Republicans don't go out and talk to people and tell the Democrats, first thing we do is build the wall. And when the wall is done, we will do regularization. And let's talk about the specifics of that, because we want to be generous hearted. We're Americans. That will work, but not this. The Trump Organization was found guilty of criminal tax fraud in New York trial. Okay, what this means? Nothing. It's on every newspaper. The Trump Organization gave benefits to employees that they helped the employees make sure were not taxable. So things like, let's pay for your kid's college, but we're not going to pay you a salary to pay your kid's college. We're just going to give your kid a scholarship, something like that. That's a taxable benefit, especially when it's coming from a corporation. And when it's coming from a corporation, they've got to do it. So they're going to face some penalty. It does not involve Donald Trump or his family members. They are not under indictment. They were not on trial. And no, if you read a story that doesn't lead with that, it's a bad story. And I've got the Wall Street Journal story. It leads with, former President Trump's family business was convicted Tuesday of criminal tax fraud. All right, so okay, get the president in the first graph. Second graph. The jury found two Trump Organization corporate entities guilty of all criminal counts they faced, including conspiracy, criminal tax fraud, and falsifying business records. The two entities could face a total of $1.6 million in fines. Really? That's it? $1.6 million in fines to the Trump Organization? They might have to sell, like, the lower 40 at Bedminster, whatever they call that. And then the guilty verdict is a blow to Mr. Trump. I actually don't think so. I don't think it matters a bit to Mr. Trump. It might, in fact, strengthen Donald Trump and his long litany of grievances against the prosecutorial ambitions of so many people across so many states in the federal government. But it's leading every newspaper, so I thought I would tell you about it. Allies of Kevin McCarthy implore GOP holdouts to back him for speaker. Now, this is something worthy of your time and attention. Call up your Republican congressperson and say, would you please get Kevin McCarthy into the speaker's chair immediately? And we're going to slap around forever everyone who opposes him. They're banished from this show. You'll never hear a good word. Now, they might be posturing right now, and I don't know who's going to vote against them in round one. But if they screw this up, they're costing momentum. They're costing us time. Kevin McCarthy is going to be the speaker. He's going to be a very good speaker. He's a great leader in California, a great minority leader. He's going to be a great speaker. And people are screwing with him. There are 222 Republicans and a handful of them, between 2 and 8, are screwing around with him. And those 2 and 8 people should be exiled. If they end up screwing this up, they should just be exiled from our rolls. And I mean from the rolls of conservative media. They should not be on Fox. They should not be on the Hugh Hewitt Show. They should not get your money. They should never get your time, attention, or favorable, because they are screwing up the transition of power. We are actually better off than we were at the start of 2020, even though we have lost the Senate 51-49 and we had hoped to take it. That's disappointing. But having the House matters, provided the House works like a conservative Republican House ought to work. That's what I'll talk about after the break. Don't go anywhere, America. It's Christmas time. Shake it off, Georgia. Good work, Herschel. You tried. You didn't get across the goal line. Maybe in the future. We'll be right back on the Hugh Hewitt Show.
I'm James Ackerman, the president and CEO of Prison Fellowship. On behalf of our entire staff, and more importantly, the prisoners' families you bless, I want to personally thank you for your donation to our Salem Radio Network Angel Tree campaign. Thanks for opening your heart and your wallet this Christmas season.
Morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt, live inside the Beltway, joined by my friend from West Virginia, the Attorney General of that great state, the Mountaineer State, Pat Morrissey. Good. Welcome back, General. It's good to have you on the Hugh Hewitt Show again.
You, it's good to be with you. It's been a wild stretch, but I'm grateful to be back on your program.
Well, good to talk to you. Now, General, before we get to some serious law and bore people to death, but you and I are lawyers, we like to talk law. People are looking at Joe Manchin and saying he's either going to get retired or he's going to get retired. And you are one of the people that they think might try and retire him. Is that true?
It is true. As you may recall, you, in a really, really tough year, 2018, I lost one of the closest U.S. Senate races in the country to Joe Manchin by 3 points. And they threw mountains of money in against us. I am looking very seriously at that race for 2024. I think if you look at the records, it's very clear we have the best record for the state of West Virginia. Not only have we been out in front taking on the swamp, leading the way to win one of the biggest separation of powers cases in 20 years, West Virginia VPA, we were out in front on education issues, winning one of the broadest school choice laws in the country this year. We've been a leader fighting fentanyl and what's going on at the border. And we've actually realized the largest per capita opioid settlements in the nation. We're ready to go. We have a record that fits the people of our state. And I think Joe Manchin, with his vote in the Inflation Reduction Act, has so deeply disappointed so many West Virginians that they're ready for a change.
Yeah, I don't know that he's actually going to run. Unless he switches party. Have you considered what you'll do if he switches party?
I don't think that he'll do that. I think he's a traditional Democrat and that he's had that opportunity in the past. And so I just don't see that happening. But look, my focus over the last 6 years, when you run in a race like that, you learn lessons. And I think we buckled back down in the AG's office. We've done some pretty incredible things. You've talked about some of them on the radio. And I think that people are going to see the difference in someone that works and advances West Virginia's interest, and also who has been on the front lines taking on and defeating the Biden agenda. And certainly, if Joe Manchin runs, he won't be able to do that. And quite frankly, we're better positioned than any other person who would run. Now, to be clear, Hugh, I'm seriously considering this. You know, a lot of people are pushing me to run for governor of our state as well. So I'm deliberating it. We have time. We're going to do this the right way. And I'm still excited to continue to fight against the Biden administration. That's a constant effort, a part of our office every day.
I'm going to come back to West Virginia versus CPA in a second, the opioid settlement. But I want to stress one thing. I'd be open the show by saying congratulations, Reverend Senator Warnock, on being reelected, and to say to Herschel, well done, good try. But like Kerry Lake, like Blake Masters, like Dr. Oz, the first time you run for the office should not be for the Senate of the United States. It's just, it's too hard. You ran successfully for Attorney General twice now. You ran unsuccessfully for Senate. So this would be your fourth statewide race. What will you know at the starting line now if you do this that you didn't know when you ran against Joe Manchin the first time or even when you ran for AG the first time?
You know, I think one of the biggest things that you learn is that when you're running for U.S. Senate or you're running for governor, the voters need to know what your vision is. They need to know you at a much deeper level. When you're running for AG, I think that voters know you. They make a judgment on you. But it's much deeper when you're running for these other offices. And so over the last few years, I've been focusing on refining the record and ensuring that if I do run for a higher office in the future, they're going to know there's no more qualified person to serve either the U.S. Senate or governor coming out of this AG position because we've been able to get so much done. You also, from a practical perspective, you learn when you have a race like that. Last time they had about $34 million pumped into West Virginia compared to the 18 total on our side. And as you may recall, a lot of that was spent in a primary. We're already way ahead in terms of building our infrastructure and resources, four times the resources of the guy that got in just recently. And I think that we're in a position where we can articulate our message and people will hear it. We won't be off the air for 3 months. That was a killer back in 18, where for 3 months, the other side, Schumer and Manchin, just were able to run ads and we weren't able to respond. That won't happen in the future, and we'll be ready for all comers.
You know, General, I'm laughing to myself because I began the show saying the same thing. I'm a much better radio host than I was in 1990 when I began because I've been doing it forever for 33 years, right? And so there are
You have to learn from experience, right?
Yes.
You make mistakes, you get better. And if you dwell on that, you have a – I always say self-awareness is an underrated characteristic in politics. Well, you know, we have a little bit of self-awareness. You learn what you did right. You learn what you made mistakes in. You get better and you go win.
Yeah. Now let's move to West Virginia versus EPA because I wanted to thank you personally. People have no idea. I wrote a Washington Post column about this 6 months. This is the most important freedom case in the last three. I think Dobbs was big. Dobbs was huge for saving life. But for saving freedom of people who are already alive, West Virginia versus EPA is it. Would you explain to people what that was about and how you succeeded?
Absolutely.
God
this
bless you for it.
This is probably one of the biggest cases we've seen in our lifetime. And here's why, at the end of the day, a lot of people talked about the fact that, Morrissey went after the Biden climate agenda and we halted it on the regulatory side and some of the mandates they were trying to put in place. But what this case was really about at its essence was in our country, you have a question. Who gets to decide the major questions of the day? Should it be unelected bureaucrats or should it be the people's representatives in Congress? And I think that the court was very clear that when you have matters of vast economic and political significance, it's, of course, critical for the Congress to make the decisions as to how it's going to proceed and not leave this to the unelected bureaucrats who reach down into their bag of tricks, pull out twisted, ambiguous phrase and say, we're going to reorder the nation's power grid, or we're going to put broad new vaccine mandates in place at OSHA and in other federal agencies, the CDC evictions. I think that this has the opportunity to be a game changer because it took on the swamp in a way that no one has in a long time. And it said, no, you're not going to get the deference that we're used to giving you under the law, going back to the Chevron deference from 1984. You're not going to get that anymore, because we're going to ensure that the core of the Constitution takes precedence. There will be no constitutional shortcuts for the bureaucrats anymore. And by removing that deference, that makes a big difference for freedom and it forced people to go through the right process.
You know, people don't know this, but at the end of Gladiator, when Russell Crowe gets gut stabbed by the Roman emperor, nobody sees it, right? They don't. But he's going to bleed out, and he does bleed out. The administrative state is going to bleed out because of the lawsuit you brought, West Virginia versus EPA. Now, people don't know that's going to take 10 years. But this court, if it stays a 6-3 court, or gets better under the next Republican president, it's going to bleed out the administrative state. So thank you.
And you know what? The other point I would make is that when we were going through the process, a lot of people criticized us. We went 0-4 at the D.C. Circuit. 0-4. We went 2-0 at the U.S. Supreme Court. It took me 9 years leading this coalition. The reason why I mention that is that now the case law begins to populate through the Court of Appeals, through the district courts. And when you get a new administration, you could take this major questions doctrine and the reduction of power of the bureaucracy. You can embed it in agency rules, and the next president has a chance to really, truly go after the swamp using the weapon of West Virginia v. EPA, which, by the way, is a value-neutral decision that doesn't favor Republicans or Democrats because it adheres to the rule of law.
General, can I put you on hold and hold you over for one extra segment this morning? Because I want to talk about the opioid crisis and what you're going to do with the settlement. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. The day after Herschel Walker loses in Georgia, I am talking with Attorney General Pat Morrissey of West Virginia. He might be running against Joe Manchin. He's done so before, came very close, but not enough. And he's learned. And by the way, General, what is your political website? I don't want your AG website. I want your political website if people want to follow what your political choices are.
Sure. So right now we have a website called Team Morrissey. So that's Team and then Morrissey, not the singer. So if you can tell.
And not Ed Morrissey either. Not Hot Air is Ed Morrissey. Hot Air is edited by our friend Ed Morrissey, my frequent guest.
Exactly. No, he spells it wrong.
And I want him to interview you so it can be Morrissey on Morrissey here on the Hugh Hewitt Show in the future. But let's get to the opioid settlement. General, I saw the tobacco settlement in California get wasted, thrown away. Billions of dollars on TV ads, wasted, just throwing water into the ocean. So I don't know how much money you got from the opioid defendants. What are you going to spend it on, and how are you going to make sure it's effective?
What a great question. And in fact, that's been driving me from the very beginning. It doesn't matter how much money you get in if the money's going to go down the government black hole. And that's what actually we've been working on preventing. So West Virginia has actually created kind of a first-of-its-kind structure. All the states, of course, to obtain national settlement money have been bringing in their counties, their municipalities, creating structures to make it work. And in fact, many across the country are creating broad new government structures. And I'm a little weary of creating a lot of new government for this. Here's what West Virginia is doing a little bit different. Number one, we're actually dividing the money up. There's going to be a portion that goes to the counties and cities, about 24.5%. And the counties and cities had really insisted on that. But that's going to go to a lot of the immediate needs that they're addressing right now with opioids. Obviously, West Virginia has been hit as hard or harder than any state in the nation. And now with the fentanyl crisis, it's even doubly so because of the illicit product coming across the border. But beyond that, there's going to be money that's set aside with a foundation. And that's actually not going to be run through the traditional political terms. So the money's not going to get wasted. There will be broad oversight through my office and the Attorney General's office to make sure resources are spent right. But we're going to have the best private sector leaders. It's a public-private partnership.
Amen.
In the country.
Amen. General, I'm getting ahead of myself there. I served 17 years on the Orange County, California Children and Families Commission, which was funded by the tobacco tax. And the first thing we did is we didn't spend any money for 3 years. We built the foundation so that we could maintain the services that we eventually stood up. Totally voluntary. We were paid $100 a meeting. I lost money on every meeting I went to. And the reason we insisted on that, we didn't want anyone making money from this thing. You have to have some staff, of course. How much money is going to go into the foundation?
Yes. So this is great. So 72.5% of the overall settlement amount will go in. And right now, quite frankly, we're negotiating because I want to make sure that the attorney's fee amount is reasonable and that it's not just this outrageous number. And so that's still going to be decided by the courts. But the beautiful thing about this issue is, number one, needs assessment. I'm insisting on that because you look across the 55 counties, money flows on the basis of needs. Second, all the money doesn't get dumped in right away. It's actually over a prolonged period of time. It's invested. So the money's got to be managed very carefully by a lot of professionals from representatives across our state. I'm excited about it. It's going to be different and better than any of the other models in the country. I spent 6 months negotiating this with folks all across our state. It's a good agreement. I'm excited about it. You right now, we're probably looking at probably an aggregate of about $1 billion overall.
All right, so, General, one piece of advice for you. There's a firm out in San Francisco called Bainbridge. They broke off from Bain Consulting. After about 6 years of spending money, 8 years, we brought them in, and they did a Bain Consulting kind of review of where we were spending the money. And they said, this is good, this is bad. They're great, and they are not invested. They don't make money by making money. They're not-for-profit sector. Don't waste it. God bless you, don't waste it, because the opioid crisis is going to be around for 100 years.
Amen.
And that foundation is going to be the you'll figure it
that's
out as you go along.
Right. That's the godsend that's going to help save a lot of lives.
TeamMorrissey.com or TeamMorrissey.org, General?
TeamMorrissey.com. Go online. Learn more about us. We're coming. And be on the lookout in the next few months.
We're going to talk more about the opioid crisis down the road. Well done, General Morrissey. Stay tuned, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt.
Look, you did the tough thing during COVID. You paid your people and pulled your business through the pandemic, or really the lockdown. And now, doing the tough thing could qualify you for up to $26,000 per employee at COVIDtaxrelief.org. Government funds are available to reward companies with two or more employees who stayed open during COVID. This is not a loan, and you don't have to pay it back. The program is complicated, but nobody knows more about it than the CPAs and tax experts at COVIDtaxrelief.org. You pay nothing up front. They do all the work and share a percentage of the cash they get you. Businesses of all types, including nonprofits and churches, can qualify, including those who took PPP loans, even if you had increases in sales. You did the tough thing for your employees during COVID. Let COVIDtaxrelief.org help you get up to $26,000 per employee. Visit COVIDtaxrelief.org. That's COVIDtaxrelief.org.
Let your heart. We're playing this for Congressman Mike Gallagher. Because it's a bit wistful. It's a little bit of Rod Stewart to make Congressman Gallagher's troubles fade. Now, the good news is the Green Bay Packers did beat the Chicago Bears last weekend. The bad news is they beat the Chicago Bears last weekend. Congressman Mike Gallagher, welcome. I guess a win is a win is a win. But when you beat the Bears, is it really a win?
Well, it is when, in beating the Bears, you become the winningest football team in football history. So that was a massive, massive victory for the Green Bay Packers. We still have a 4% chance of making the playoffs. So hope springs eternal.
I love that, Congressman. I love that. Wait until last millennium. I love that stuff. Just you wait until last millennium. We'll be really good again. So I also want to point out the Browns are slightly better than the Bears. And what's the name of that basketball team you have? What do we call them up there? The Bucks?
The Milwaukee Bucks.
The Bucks are slightly better than the Cavaliers, or the Cavaliers beat the Lakers last night. Congressman Gallagher, what is this Select Committee on China going to be like? How many people are going to be on it? What's it going to do? Why bother? I mean, I'm arguing in favor of it, but maybe you should.
I think it'll have roughly 9 or 10 Republicans and let's say 7 or 8 Democrats. So I do think the speaker, soon to be speaker, Kevin McCarthy, sincerely wants this to be a bipartisan exercise because he believes that given the importance of the issue, we need Republicans and Democrats to be working together in order to push back against Chinese Communist Party aggression. I can imagine 3 lines of effort for the Select Committee. One is ensuring all of the current committees are working together to surge hard power west of the international dateline in general and provide enhanced support to Taiwan in particular. There's a lot of language in the NDAA that we're going to pass today with that in mind, but there's still a lot we need to do in terms of pressing the executive branch and the Pentagon in particular to move faster. The second line of effort I would call economic statecraft. When you identify those industries or areas where we're just too dependent on China, and figure out a way to reduce our dependency, as well as figure out a way to cut off the flow of U.S. dollars that's funding China's military modernization and genocide. And then I think the final line of effort is what I would call ideological competition or human rights, finding a way to expose the atrocities of the CCP and contrast the totalitarian system that the CCP is implementing with the American system of self-government and American leadership of the free world. And in that, I would also put the way in which the Chinese Communist Party is trying to corrupt a lot of our domestic institutions. So a lot of areas where the Select Committee can have a massive impact. But overall, I think it involves telling a compelling story to the American people about why this matters, why they should care about the threat posed by the Chinese Communist Party.
Now, Congressman, I got a couple of things to cover with you. But first, a recommendation unsolicited from me. Jake Sherman asserted quite certainly that you are going to be the chairman of this on Monday's show. I'm not going to ask you about that because you can't tell me if you're going to be the chairman. That's up to soon-to-be Speaker McCarthy. But if you are and you have any input, I hope you put at least one freshman on that committee. And I hope his name is Juan Ciscomani. And the reason is we need a Spanish-speaking member of that committee to speak on Spanish-language media about the Chinese Communist Party. And I mean, really, to take the message, and having a freshman makes it big. And I don't know how many Spanish-speaking members we have on the Republican side, but I mean, someone fluent who can go on Spanish-language media and say, look out, these are bad. Now, the second thing I want to recommend to your attention is Governor Larry Hogan yesterday announced an emergency directive to prohibit the use of TikTok, China, and Russia-based products and platforms in state government. This is big news. You know, he's got it. He's figured out TikTok should be out of this country. And Larry Hogan gets it. Does the committee that you see standing up get it?
Absolutely. I have a bill, and Senator Rubio has a companion bill in the Senate that would effectively ban TikTok. Ours is going to be a bipartisan bill in the House of Representatives. I sent a letter to my governor, Democratic Governor Tony Evers, 2 days ago with the entire Wisconsin delegation, urging him to do what South Dakota and now Maryland have done, which is lead by example and prohibit the use of TikTok. And I think Americans need to understand, not only is this highly addictive, is it highly corrosive for our kids' cognitive development, you're handing the Chinese Communist Party a massive bit of leverage over all of us in the future. You're giving them the ability to track your location. You're giving them the ability to collect information on what websites you're visiting, even when you're not using the app, all of your keystroke information. That's simply unacceptable. And the fact that we have multiple former members of Congress that are lobbying on behalf of TikTok, effectively lobbying for ByteDance, which means you're effectively lobbying for the Chinese Communist Party, is disgusting. It's not worth it. I know they pay a lot of money. They spent $7 million last year on lobbying alone, nearly $7 million, but it's not worth it.
Will the committee have subpoena power, Congressman? Will the committee have subpoena power?
The rules are still in development, but I believe it will. I believe, though, it also will have the ability to, if the committee makes a recommendation, the committee of jurisdiction that already exists will have to take up that bill that the select committee recommends be considered. So there is a way in which it can productively move legislation or ensure that legislation doesn't fall through the cracks of various committees who have overlapping jurisdiction who might not otherwise be interested in doing something related to China.
The reason I asked about subpoena power is I want you to subpoena, and I'll be not, if you're the chair or you're a member, I'm going to be banging on you every week. I want every one of those lobbyists subpoenaed to appear in front of the committee so the American public can see who is selling them the rope, because that is exactly what they are doing. And it's not just TikTok users. It's kids using TikToks. They're building portfolios, dossiers on these children. And people think I'm an Orwellian nut. I'm not. I just know the CCP. Am I crazy? They're going to file this stuff away with their AI capacity and use it for as long as those people are alive.
One other thing to consider, Hugh, an increasing amount of young Americans get news from TikTok. So
yes,
with the CCP controlled algorithm, they could censor the news in a way that's more friendly to CCP narratives, or let's say suppresses information about the protests in China. There's all sorts of ways where they can sort of edit the reality that young Americans are consuming. I would commend the work of Klon Kitchen at the American Enterprise Institute, who's been talking about this a lot and I think really giving a detailed analysis about why this is a threat. So my hope is that we'll be able to move this legislation in a Republican-controlled House. Again, it will be bipartisan. And if nothing else, the Select Committee on China could shine a light on this. And one other thing, Hugh, this is kind of bound up in a bigger discussion about how we regulate the cross-border flow of data. There's no real coherent arrangement for that right now. We don't have a reciprocal arrangement with China when it comes to how we govern cross-border data flows. There's something called the ICTS process. It's very new. It's very underdeveloped. This is an area that Congress needs to focus on when we do oversight over the next 2 years. It's a wild west out there right now. We need to make sure that China is no longer eating our lunch in the data space.
Okay, so please remember the subpoenas. Please remember our Spanish-speaking friends. And then I want to read this to you from Ellis Items. Do you read Ellis Items every morning? He covers China like nobody else does, John Ellis. There's a story today. It's a Substack. Several Chinese graduate students have invented a plain-looking, low-cost coat that can hide the human body day or night from security cameras monitored by AI, according to the team. The Invisa defense coat can be seen by human eyes, but is covered in a pattern that blinds cameras in the day and sends out unusual heat signals at night, according to the team. Now, that's from the South Morning China Post, and it's in Ellis Items. That's because the surveillance of the Chinese state is ubiquitous in China, and it's going to be ubiquitous in the United States if we don't get TikTok out of here. So I want this select committee, maybe the most important thing McCarthy does in his 2 years as speaker, what maybe 20 years as speaker, is to get the hearings going and get the American people informed. And I hope that, will it be Hakeem Jeffries who appoints the members of it, not Nancy Pelosi?
Yes, it will.
You know, if you shake your head on radio, Congressman, if you shake your head on radio, people can't see that actually on radio.
I assumed everyone was watching this video that's being recorded.
The Salem News.
It's
called multi-platform. I'm not sure you're the guy to run the China committee if you don't realize that there are kind of double platforms going here.
This is why I need your media too.
Hey, by shaking his head, he confused the TikTok people.
Right. I have my sort of the Harry Potter cloak of invisibility that you just mentioned.
That was CCP subterfuge.
That's right.
We got 1 minute left. Who are the Democrats that you would like to see Hakeem Jeffries put on this? Because they've got to be, I hope one of them Spanish speaking, like at least one member of the Republicans. But who do you have in mind?
Alyssa Slotkin would be great. She has an incredible national security background. Abigail Spanberger, Mikey Sherrill, Jimmy Panetta, who I work with on the Armed Services Committee. There's a lot of Democrats like that with national security backgrounds who are more serious, more sober, who are willing to work together. Heck, even Ro Khanna. Ro Khanna, when it comes to
Ro's very smart.
He's very smart. So I think you get a solid group of seven serious Democrats like that to make this a very serious effort.
And the staffing will be done by when?
My hope is to have, you know, if I'm so lucky as to be appointed to this, my goal would be to have it up and running by January. I know it's going to take some time, but I really don't think you can waste that first quarter. No. You really got to be ready to roll. So we look forward to having the Hugh Hewitt media offsite retreat so you can school us in the ways of the force.
I'm going to be there.
The difference between radio and audio and video. That would be
and
helpful.
You know, this newfangled stuff called Twitter. We're going to talk to you about that and how to use that. And we're going to talk to you about the NFL. Congressman Mike Gallagher, soon to be, I think, Chairman Mike Gallagher. Thank you, my friend. Always a pleasure to see you, even when you bring a Bears victory and say that counts. That really doesn't.
I'm waving goodbye to the people that can't see me.
He's nodding. Honestly, how long have we been doing radio, radio blogger? How long have we been doing this?
We've been doing radio since, 2000?
People are nodding at us. You are obviously not prepping the guests that facial signals, and this is a producer fail. Speaking of producer fails, have you ballooned more above 190?
Actually, since you shamed me for being a pound overweight, I've shed down to 190.7 is what the scale said yesterday.
Oh, so you're getting close to your target again. You're kind of like Battleship, playing Battleship with your weight loss gain, and we're, you know, E4. No, we're not there. So 190 is the objective. My advice is to get to 188 and use the 2 pounds so that I don't have to do any reminders for you. But my PhDweightloss.com has dropped, Dwayne, 49.3 pounds.
But right? The cool thing about this is you can slip a pound or two, and it's not hard to get back on the beam.
Is that what you call it, slipping? I call it eating.
A pound?
I call it eating.
I call it eating, too.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I'm at 182 this morning. I'm 3 pounds under my weight, so I don't have to worry about the Christmas cookies I'm going to consume en masse today because I got a 3 pound buffer. That's the way to live.
Did you get the ginger things?
No, the ginger snaps, I ate all of them in one day, so they were sent away. And so now I have the raisin peanut butter ones.
Well, we don't have to worry about weight gain there.
No, because raisin peanut butters are...
Nobody eats those.
Nobody eats those, but the ginger snaps have been sent away.
866. Yeah. 864. We didn't do the phone number.
What did you say? You say 866?
No, we didn't. I was waiting for you to do it. You didn't do the phone number.
864-644-1900. Thank you. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. Last week, I posted on Twitter. I don't see anything different about the Twitter in my feed. Nothing, zero zip. I think panic on the left is a loss of control over a platform central to news distribution. To which a response came from an I.J. Bailey. What's fascinating about this is all that you have to say is the left, and you don't have to consider anything beyond what you've already believed or want to believe. Same thing with woke. It is a get-out-of-jail-free card from critical thinking. I thought that was pretty provocative and interesting, and so I looked up I.J. Bailey. It turns out Isaac J. Bailey is actually Professor Bailey, award-winning journalist and the James K. Batten Professor of Public Policy at Davidson College. He's also a former Nieman Fellow, which is a big deal if you follow journalism in Harvard. He is the author of My Brother Moochie, Regaining Dignity in the Face of Crime, Poverty, and Racism in the American South, which came out in 2018. More recently, the book Why Didn't We Riot? Black Man in Trump Land, which I read over the weekend. It's fascinating. He joins me this morning. Good morning, Professor Bailey. Thank you for accepting my invitation. Welcome to the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Yes, hi, Hugh.
It's great to have you on. Thanks. I want people to know you told me that you stutter, and so we're not going to rush, and we're not going to.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're not gonna worry about that. But I am gonna do my traditional first two questions for anyone who comes on the Hugh Hewitt Show for the first time, and this goes back 23 years. Was Alger Hiss a communist spy?
I have no idea. First.
Okay, that's fair. Number two, have you read The Looming Tower?
I have not.
Okay, it's interesting to me. The reason I ask those is that means our GPSs are really far apart. And
politically. All
right. And obviously, having read Why Didn't We Riot, I know they're very far apart. Would you tell people briefly your position politically? Where are you on the political spectrum?
Yes, I can turn and start with that. I am an independent, I'm at least sort of like officially, and yet though, like in terms of sort of that, like, I'm at least like in the past, but yes, like in terms of that, like I sort of like actually voted for like both parties, folks like Lindsey Graham, Mark Sanford, Nikki Haley, et cetera. George W. Bush, in sort of like 2000. Yes, like, and also sort of, when it comes to Obama and Clinton and Biden.
Okay, so since 2010, you've moved left. And I read in Why Didn't We Riot, a Black Man in Trump Land, the words of someone who has just about had it with the Republican Party for a lot of reasons. You're done. You're done with Trump. You're done with me. You're done with everybody. You're done with conservatism because you think it's corrupt. Is that a fair summary?
In terms of sort of that, like, I am sort of actually done. yes, like in terms of actually with the party itself. Yes, like, and because like in terms of that, yes, like in terms of sort of that, like I am sort of actually from sort of like South Carolina, like in terms of that. Like,
right, so yes, no,
like, in terms of sort of that, like I am a sort of like Southern dude. Yes, like, and also like in terms of sort of that, like I am, it's like I am sort of like, it's like I am sort of like, it's like I am sort of I'm sort of I'm like fairly conservative, and yet though like in terms of sort of that at least like actually when it comes to the GOP itself right now, like in terms of that, like it is just too scary right
and, now. And you know, Professor, the most riveting part of Why Didn't We Riot to me is your experience in a mostly white evangelical church in South Carolina.
Yes.
I have a great Presbyterian pastor who grew up in Memphis, who concerns himself mm-hmm. a lot with racial justice issues, works very hard on it, tries to keep the church aware of it. But when I read your book, I thought, my goodness, I've known a lot of people in Professor Bailey's position, and they may not think what I think they're thinking about their predominantly white church. It's a big reveal, actually. Would you have you heard that from other people?
Oh, yes. Oh, like, yes, like, and sort of, I mean, at least no doubt about it. I mean, yes, and also because in terms of that, like, I sort of like, actually went to that church, I mean, at least sort of, like, initially, yes, like, in terms of, yes, like, and because, like, I, yes, like, in terms of that, like, I sort of, like, yes, like, in terms of that, like, I was, like, actually trying to reach out. I'm at least like across sort of racial lines, et cetera. I'm sort of like cultural lines, like all those sort of things. It's like, and also like in terms of that, like I sort of actually stayed there for about 17 years. It's like, and also like in terms of that, yes, in terms of sort of that, like my sort of, my kids, yes, like in terms of sort of like actually were sort of like actually baptized there. Like I was baptized there, yes, like, and also, I'm like, and yet, though, like, in terms of sort of that, like, after the Obama victory, yes, like, in terms of sort of, I'm like, at least, like, how, like, the sort of, like, level of, like, racial animus there and ugliness,
you know, I'm surprised by that, Professor, because I'm not a stranger to AME churches. I've worshipped at First AME in L.A. and at Christ the Redeemer in Southern California. I haven't been over to Zion yet, where my friend Pastor Mark Whitlock pastors here, but I'm no stranger to it. But I have never really thought through being one of a handful of blacks in an almost all-white church, and that's an interesting revelation. I'm not sure if I'd recommend it. Would you recommend it to people?
I'm like, I would like only recommend it to folks like who have a sort of, I'm sort of like really, really thick skin. It's like, and also sort of, it's like, and also sort of, it's like, and also sort of actually with their eyes sort of like, I'm sort of like wide open.
I also learned from Why Didn't We Riot what it's like to be the only black columnist for a newspaper in an overwhelmingly white area that's wealthy. You got a lot of incoming heat and hate.
Yes.
Fair?
Yes.
Okay.
For sure.
So the big question at the end, and by the way, there's a lot I disagree with in here. I don't think you're very fair to Rush and Sean. As far as I know, have got zero racism in them, zero, but you don't like them very much. But I don't want to talk about, and I like Dr. Ben Carson quite a lot, and you don't.
Okay.
What I want to know is, what do you want my audience, center-right, overwhelmingly white, but some diversity, to know about being a black? I mean, yesterday, Raphael Warnock, black man, beats Herschel Walker, black man, in the Deep South. And so I'm thinking to myself, what does Isaac Bailey want my audience to know? So you have the floor.
Wow. Okay. In terms of sort of like first, like in terms of like actually just know that I am not crazy, right? Yes, like, and also to know, yes, like in terms of sort of that, like, I too, like, absolutely, I sort of like, actually love this country. Yes, like, and sort of like, absolutely, yes, like, in terms of sort of, yes, like, and also sort of like, and sort of like, absolutely, yes, like, and sort of like, actually trying to fight for it, yes, like, in order for it to be its best, right? And yet, so like, in terms of sort of that, like, what I have often seen, at least from folks, just like in terms of sort of like, it's to like actually just to sort of actually just say that I am just some kind of that woke dude. It's like in terms of sort of like who actually hates America. Yeah, it's like, or sort of like, like, et cetera. So like in terms of sort of that, like, I sort of like, that's like in terms of sort of that, like, I sort of like absolutely love this place through and through. Yes, like, and also like that, like, in terms of that, like, I sort of absolutely want it to live up to its like, fullest potential. So like, now, that really is my focus.
And from the book, I want to quote two things. Page 20, this book is for Harvard professors who misuse the term identity politics in a way that suggests black people in Trump land should just shut up and take it. And then a few pages, maybe a dozen pages later, for years, racist stereotypes about being a young black man had lingered in my brain. I'm a black man. I have eight black brothers. My father was black. My stepfather, a man who stepped in to help my mother take care of a single wide trailer full of kids after she left my father, is black. I know the totality of black men who commit murder on an annual basis doesn't even add up to a half of 1% of all black men in this country. I know my dark skin hasn't made me violent. I wrote that down because I think that jarred me. I don't think I think of black people as being violent, but you clearly think that a lot of people at Harvard and other places do.
Yes. Like, and also, yes, like in terms of sort of like, yes, like in terms of sort of that, like, if you like actually just look at like this sort of like midterm like cycle, for instance, like in terms of sort of like in New York, just like in terms of sort of that like these sort of like winning messages, just like actually there, yes, like in terms of sort of like actually seem to be just in terms of sort of that like that same sort of like crime kind of message, yes, like in terms of sort of like actually just to try, yes, like in order to like actually just try to like actually win votes, at least by sort of actually making people afraid. Yes, like, and also like in terms of like absolutely what we know. Yes, like in terms of sort of that. Yes, like in terms of sort of that. Yes, like in terms of sort of that, like actually sort of like actually throughout our history, like in terms of sort of like black men and crime, yes, like in terms of sort of like have like always been linked.
Now, Professor Bailey, I have been around long enough. I remember 1968 campaign was primarily about crime. I think the 2024 campaign is going to be primarily about crime. But I don't think it's going to be racist to talk about crime. I think it's going to be essential to talk about crime because of Soros-backed prosecutors in places like L.A., just recalled in San Francisco, Philadelphia, where they will not prosecute people. And I don't care what their color is, but after I've read Why Didn't We Riot, I gather you think anyone who talks that way about crime is, whether knowingly or not, perpetuating a racist trope?
Yes, like in terms of sort of that, but yes, like in terms of sort of that, yes, like in terms of sort of that, like it isn't just about talking about crime, but yet, though, like in terms of sort of that, like it is sort of like how it is discussed, right? Yes, like, and because sort of like actually for like the past 25 years, yes, like in terms of sort of that, like I too like actually have been writing about crime, yes, like, and sort of like actually talking about crime, et cetera. Like, and yet, though, like, in terms of that, like, what I have, like, absolutely been trying to do, just, like, is to actually bring a sort of, like, more sort of, like, nuance to it, just, like, and also truth, And also to sort of like actually just to sort of these are actually deep that myths about Christ.
So
like in terms of talk about that. Yes, go ahead. I'm sorry.
How do you want us to talk about it? I mean, Professor, this is really the heart of it. When you hear someone on, you've contributed to MSNBC, you listen to these debates every day. How does anyone earn credibility with Isaac Bailey? Because I'm like the most reasonable person out there, as far as I know, on Twitter. And you took exception to my using the words woke and left. And I thought, well, goodness gracious, how do I talk about this without upsetting a Neiman fellow?
Yes, like in terms of sort of, I'm like one, like in terms of sort of that, like in terms of sort of, just like in terms of sort of, just like in terms of sort of, at least to actually stop using the word woke, yes, like, and because again, like in terms of sort of that, like as soon as you do that, yes, like in terms of sort of like all kinds of nuance, it's like actually goes away. It's like, and also like in terms of sort of that, like it actually becomes a sort of impossible. It's like in order for you to like actually see me fully, yes, and also to like actually hear me fully, right?
No, I'm going to disagree with you there, Isaac Bailey. And the reason is shorthand in journalism matters. And you know this. You're a Neiman fellow. My God, you're a Gina. You're a Neiman fellow. So when I hear Christian nationalism.
Mislabels are not good.
Okay, but let's play that out a little bit. I'm going to give you a list of labels. Christian nationalist, Trumpist, election denier, voter suppressor, woke and left, right wing and fringe, oath keeper. What is the difference among all those when we're using shorthand? Insurrectionist. There are so many shorthand terms. And I get mad at lefties who use, I say that with fun in my heart. I don't mind getting called away. So I get mad at lefties when they use Christian nationalists because I don't know any Christian nationalists, and I've been a Christian my whole life. So how do we tell journalism what they can and cannot use shorthand on the left and shorthand on the right?
say that I ask you to define those terms, like any one of those terms. It's like, if you cannot really, like, actually give me a really solid definition that makes sense, then don't use those terms.
All right, here's my definition. Now, let's hear you critique it. I thought a lot about that. What does woke mean? Woke means that segment of the progressive element that embraces ESG automatically and reflexively goes to explanations long discredited over why the country is the way that it is. It also encompasses those who believe in CRT and CLT, critical legal theory, critical race theory, and its use in either diluted or full strength anywhere in the classroom. That's the woke. What's wrong with my definition?
Respectfully, I don't know what that meant. It's like, and also sort of like ESG. CRT in there as well. just like in terms of sort of that, like it actually really doesn't tell me anything about anybody in particular or sort of like any kind of real sort of like defined group. But sort of like my sort of like next question for you then, just like in terms of sort of that, sort of like under your definition, I'm like, what exactly makes me woke?
What, I don't know if you're woke. After I read Trump Land, I don't think you're woke. I think you've had lived experience, which is extraordinary. Having a brother serving a life sentence, having your life experience, living in a white church, you are not woke. You are angry. And I would say you are justifiably angry. But I'm also coming to the conclusion, you got a hell of a lot of courage, because a stutter is a difficult thing to take into the world of broadcast. And I mean, it really is a, it's very impressive to me that you even agreed to talk to me on air. Have you been taken advantage of on air because you stutter?
Like in terms of sort of like your sort of like question on that, yes, it's like a very good one. Yes, like, and also because sort of like here, sort of like, is like the history on that. bigger challenge for me than racism.
And tell people how to talk to people with a stutter. I don't want to talk over you, because I learned from my friend with a stutter, don't talk over people with a stutter. But I want you to tell people in the country how to talk to people who stutter.
Sure. Understand this fundamental. Yours, for instance. And yet, though, soon as my articulators like actually get involved, and then struggles come, right? with my ums and ahs and my stops, et cetera, just like all those sort of things.
Isaac,
who is actually dealing with this one challenge, and that's it.
That's remarkably well put. And I'm learning as we go along and doing this. I want you to come back in the future. But I also want people to go and get the book, Why Didn't We Riot? Because I think it is a somewhat searing book for white conservatives. I don't know if it's persuasive, but it's searing. And it's going to be very searing for white Christians in predominantly white congregations who are very proud that they have some black members in it. It's going to be a searing experience as well. The anti-Trumpism, I kind of expected that. But there's a lot in here that I just didn't expect. And I think, no wonder you're a great writer, by the way. I think, does having a stutter make you a better writer?
Yes. Yes. Like, I thought I actually started my writing, very, very early on. Yes, like, in order to, like, actually help me be able to speak, frankly. So, yes.
I'm amazed because, people are on a spectrum. The president has a stutter that he's worked his whole life to overcome. Right. You've got a stutter that you've worked your whole life to overcome. People don't think about it if they don't run into it every single day and they don't know how to deal with it. How do your college students deal with you? Do they take your courses or do they find it too hard? I'm encouraged to hear that.
With my brand of stutter. Format is really, really difficult.
Oh, you know, Professor, next time we do this, we're going to do Skype because I need visual cues from you.
Me too. Exactly. Right. Exactly.
I need visual cues, but I got to tell you, I just want to thank you, one, for coming on, because I'm a pretty good at taking people apart at the limbs if I want to. But but I read your book and I said, we're not going to do that. And we're not going to debate what we're going to actually tell people to go read. Why Didn't We Riot? A Black Man in Trump Land. I don't think you persuade me about much, but you reveal a lot. And
that's remarkable. Which was my purpose.
It's a big reveal. And I want to wish you a Merry Christmas. And I want to thank you for coming on. And we'll do another half hour in the new year. And we'll do it by Skype so I can do it better.
Perfect.
But
yes,
I appreciate
you too.
I really appreciate your coming on. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, too.
That was terrific. Thank you, Professor Bailey.
Okay. Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home, or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-1172.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn. deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.